Thanks, Rudy, for your kind introduction, and welcome. So, some part of the motivation was already given by Rudy. So, head-related transfer functions or impulse responses characterize the acoustic path from a source, which you typically measure, for example, from a loudspeaker to the ears of a dummy head or of a real person with in-ear microphones. And these functions are known that they are, of course, incidence angle dependent. So if you, for example, rotate the head, they differ. And they are also, to some extent, distance dependent. So for example, for these two situations, here it's 3 meters, half a meter, there's, of course, a big difference in the HRTFs. If you now want to set up something like, for example, a virtual auditory environment, then it would be nice to have a database of HRTFs covering all potential positions where you would like to have virtual sources. And of course, the measurement of such a database is a quite tedious task. So people came up with the idea of, if you know, for example, the HRTF data set for all incidence angles for one distance, how can you compute or synthetically create HRTFs at different distances? And these techniques are known as range extrapolation. And of course, there are some techniques which are based on psychoacoustics, and there are some based on physical assumptions, and I will talk about physically motivated techniques. Of course, in the past, a lot of stuff has been done here. For example, as I told before, HRTFs are typically measured on a sphere or a circle, so it's quite natural to think that you could expand them into spherical harmonics. It's not that straightforward as one would assume. You need to exploit the reciprocity of the wave equation in order to do so, and then you can expand the data sets in terms of the surface spherical harmonics and the spherical Hankel function in order to perform range extrapolation. One problem which often occurs in the context of spherical harmonics is that if you have a not very dense sampling grid, or even if it's unequally sampled, like this is for typically data sets, then these methods are quite prone to numerical instabilities, and you have to regularize stuff, and that's, of course, sometimes causes problems. Another class of techniques is based on the idea of virtual acoustics, and I will go into detail later. And the idea here is that you can interpret your data set as a virtual loudspeaker array, because if you rotate the loudspeaker around the head or turn the head in the anechoic room, that's the same, you have loudspeakers all around the listener. And I will come back to this. So if you have, for example, an HRTF dataset, which has been sampled here at quite coarsely for this illustration, you have your left and right HRTF, and you have it for all of these potential loudspeaker positions. So if you consider this as an ensemble of loudspeakers, virtual ones, they're of course not real in your dataset, then this is a loudspeaker array. And if you now, for instance, want to have the HRTFs from a different source distance, like here shown here, what you can do is you can think that this, or you can interpret this as a virtual system, a virtual sound field system. So you have your HRTFs, which represent a loudspeaker array, and you can drive this virtual loudspeaker array by an appropriate driving signal, which synthesizes the virtual source. So at first sight, one would think, in sound field synthesis, the head of the listener is not covered by the techniques. And that's only partly true. In this context, this doesn't play a role, because if you, for example, have the scattering of the head by this source, by the real source, or and if you synthesize the sound field correctly, the scatterer, the head, doesn't care where the sound field comes from. If it's equal, then it doesn't care. It's not a problem in this context. Of course, if sound field synthesis introduces some errors, you will have differences. And the overall synthetic HRTF is then given from as the transfer function from the virtual source over the entire loudspeaker array to the ears. And I will show you in a minute how this looks in mathematics. So that's the two-dimensional case here. So assuming that we have taken measurements on a circle around the listener's head. And that's now the free-field case, so without HRTFs. And in sound field synthesis, you typically start with a continuous distribution of so-called secondary sources, so like kind of this continuous loudspeaker that you weight with the driving function. And if you integrate over all these contributions, then you end up with the pressure at all points in this space here. And typically, I assume that you have a point source here located, or point source monopole model for your secondary source, and that's given by the Green's function. So if you now want to know the pressure at the left and right ear, it's straightforward to replace the Green's functions by the head-related transfer function, because the head-related transfer function is, if you measure it with a loudspeaker, also the response from a point source to one of the ears. So it's quite straightforward to replace this. And the overall transfer function is given then from the virtual source to the ears, as I told you before. However, you have to take care in this case that the driving function should, of course, represent the virtual source has to be driven by a temporal Dirac pulse in that you derive in a transfer function. So far, I considered the continuous case. Of course, you have to sample everything, so you have a spatial sampling here. And in this case, of course, it's not exact anymore. You have some kind of approximation. Depending on your spatial sampling interval, you will need a discretization rate for unequally sampled data sets. That's straightforward. Then you need your driving function and your left and right HRTFs. And of course, like always in sampling, you may get spatial aliasing, and I will come back in a minute to what this means. So up to now, I didn't talk about the technique you'll use to calculate the driving functions, and there are a bunch of techniques around, which we term as sound field synthesis techniques, that are techniques which aim at the synthesis of a sound field within an extended area using an ensemble of loudspeakers. So it's really physical synthesis that is the basic assumption of sound field synthesis. And well-known approaches here are, for example, wave field synthesis, near-field compensated higher-order ambisonics, the spectral division method, and a number of numerically motivated approaches. In principle, you can use all of these approaches here. That's not a the choice is free, more or less. I will consider wave field synthesis for some reasons that we will see later. So a very brief introduction into wave field synthesis. If you want to know more about wave field synthesis, I would like to refer you to the papers due to time constraints. However, wave field synthesis is based on an approximation of this synthesis equation. So if you have here the sound field of the virtual source, you can approximate this by this integral over over the surface of the area you want to synthesize your sound field in. You have this function A, which is a window function. You have the directional gradient of the sound field of your virtual source. That's the gradient in direction of a normal vector. And again, you have Green's function here. So this part here is the driving function. And the function A takes care that only part of the loudspeakers are used in wave field synthesis. And typically, that part which where the loudspeakers propagate into the direction of the virtual source signal. Some properties of wave field synthesis, just summarized here. There are some minor deviations due to the involved approximations. This is an approximation here, and there are some far-field assumptions behind it. So for very low frequencies and nearby sources, wave field synthesis has some minor deviations. Wave field synthesis is typically a model-based approach, which means that you have some models for your virtual sources, which is good in our context here. So plane waves, point sources, and you can even have some complex or even distributed sources. And as I will come back in a minute later, you can have sources inside the listening area, so good focus sources. And a very important fact for this paper is that wave field synthesis allows for a very efficient implementation using a pre-filtering of the virtual source signal and wait and delays for the individual loudspeakers. So you can really implement it in the time domain very efficiently, and it's inherently numerically stable. There's no regularization you have to take care and such things. So, some pictures to just depict what wave field synthesis is doing. In this case here, I simulated a virtual system with equals an HRTF data set with a 5-degree sampling captured at 1.5 meters. So you can see for a virtual point source, which is located here at 3 meters, and for 1 kilohertz, you can see the wave field is synthesized correctly, so as you would suppose that it is. And for 4 kilohertz, if you increase the frequency, you can see here that's the effect of spatial aliasing, so you get some interference patterns due to spatial aliasing. There has been some research on the perceptual properties of spatial aliasing and from Helmut Wittig. And for typical wave field synthesis setups, it might be perceivable, the spatial aliasing, in terms of coloration. However, typically wave field synthesis systems are also not sampled with that high number of loudspeakers. So, coming back to focus sources, they're even more interesting in the context of spatial sampling. A focus source is a special kind of wave field you can generate with such techniques, even with wave field synthesis also, where you focus your wave field towards a focus point, so your wave field converges towards this point and diverges after. And after this focus point, you have the wave field of more or less a point source located at that position. And an interesting property is that if you increase the frequency, so here we have 2 kilohertz, we have 4 kilohertz, you can see that the area which is aliasing, there's an area which is more or less aliasing free around the center or around the focus point of the focus source, and even for 8 kilohertz we are, with this dummy head here, we are fully inside of this virtual, of this wave field, of this field without spatial aliasing. Another property which is important, I said already the listening area is limited, so only the field which is below the focus point has the correct propagation direction. However, you can change the propagation direction by changing the loudspeakers you use. In this example here, the source is at the side and propagates to that direction. So, due to these properties in terms of spatial aliasing, in the following I show results which are related to focus sources. This has two reasons. On the one hand, aliasing is not critical in that context, and on the other hand, the synthesis of near-field HRTFs is very interesting because HRTFs change dramatically for sources which get close to the listener. So for 2 or 3 meters, the changes are very, very subtle, but if you go, for example, half a meter or even here, 20 centimeters, the changes are quite abrupt, so there's quite some interest in creating synthetic near-field HRTFs. So, some results. How did I implement that? Straightforward, I used the time domain implementation of wavefield synthesis, so just some waiting and delaying and pre-filtering, so that's really straightforward. No numerically tricks and such things involved. However, there's this pre-equalization filter, which I cannot go into too much detail now, but however, if you want to implement such a thing, you have to adapt this pre-equalization filter to your spatial sampling and also to the distance of the virtual source. So you can find some details on that in the paper. There are some systematic amplitude deviations, which I will come back in a minute. And for the evaluation, I used our free data set of HRTFs, which you can download also at our homepage. And I will show some results for near-field HRERs. So that's the geometry, more or less. I assume that the listener is looking to the front, and the virtual source position is denoted by the angle here from the x-axis. A short note to this mysterious amplitude errors. If you consider the case that you have HRTFs in a horizontal plane, this is a so-called 2.5-dimensional problem. So the underlying equations would assume that the loudspeakers would be located around you in a three-dimensional space. That's not the case. For a horizontal plane, you only have a line of loudspeakers or a circle of loudspeakers around you, and that causes some physically errors in the wave field. So it's physically motivated. It has nothing to do with the method you use. So you have some systematic amplitude deviations, which are shown below here. For example, if you have the amplitude of a plane wave traveling from the front, from up to down, you can see, of course, that the amplitude at both ears in the free field is equal, like you would have to have it. However, if the plane wave, for example, comes from the side, from this side here, you can see that there is some amplitude decay, which you would not assume without a head. So you have to compensate for that. And that's quite important. If you would not do so, the interaural level difference, the ILDs, are wrong, and the ILDs are very important for the perception of near-field sources. So we have to cope for that. So, some results. That's one of the head-related impulse responses that have been extrapolated from 3 meter to half a meter, using a data set which has been captured at 1 degree angle, and you can see it looks quite nice. However, that's the measured data set at half a meter, so you can see some differences, especially in this part here. They're very minor, and if you listen to the data set, you can hear almost nothing. So the question is, of course, if that's really perceivable. More important are the ILDs, that's the interaural level differences. Results, it's well known that the ILD increases for nearby sources. So for example, the red dashed line and the blue line shows 2 measured data sets for 3 meter here and for half a meter. You can see that the ILD increases quite a lot, and using our extrapolation technique, you can also see that the ILD also increases. It's almost similar to the measured one at half a meter. This dip here is missing, which might be due to the fact that in our measurements, the loudspeaker we used for half-meter measurements has some near-field effects, and we are currently not sure if that causes this dip here. So, it's also known that for nearby sources, the low frequency response, or there's some increase in low frequencies for nearby sources, and that's shown here. So that's, again, the dashed line is the 3 meter measurement, the red line is the extrapolated from 3 meter to half a meter, the blue line is the measured one at half a meter, and you can see that we can model this low frequency increase, and also the overall frequency response looks quite reasonable. Of course, there are some deviations which are due to approximations in wave field synthesis. So, summarizing, it seems that the application of so-called virtual wave field synthesis to the range extrapolation provides especially quite accurate results for near-field HR ERs. And for far-field, as for other distances, it of course also works. So you can get some spatial aliasing artifacts. The question is how perceivable they are, and that's currently not investigated. It's inherently numerically stable. There's no regularization, no inversion, and nothing in there which is problematic in that case. It has very low computational complexity. And you can also use other virtual source models than point sources. You could use a plane wave or some kind of distributed sources. And if you like to hear how it sounds, then I uploaded some listening examples to our blog for front and side sources, and you can hear that there are really very minor differences between the measured one and the calculated ones. There is some way to increase the spatial aliasing frequency. You can use local wave field synthesis. I presented this last weekend at the AES, or the weekend before. And of course, it would be very interesting to take a look on near field effects using spherical head models and to have finally some listening experiment proving the properties. So, thanks for your attention.
Thank you for the nice presentations. Are there questions? Those who want to ask a question, I would ask to use the microphone. I ask for questions. Sasha, measuring or obtaining head-related transfer functions is going on for quite some time, and people have been impressed by the trueness of the South Field so far. What can you give listeners that previous head-related transfer function could not give them?
Yeah, it's not about measuring, it's about calculating new ones. So if you have a data set measured at 1.5 meter, it's you can have, for example, a synthetic data set for half a meter, and that's quite a difference. You can really hear the distance. That was really in the listening examples, you can really hear that there's a big difference between 3 meter and half a meter, and you can really hear the source coming closer. So, and otherwise, you would have to measure all these distances, which is takes hours. Probably. That's the main issue here, to calculate data from known data.
Okay. One question. So there
is a large computation we have done of the exact TMAR HRTF at all ranges, and which from infinity all the way down to this. So perhaps it's in a JASA paper, 2003.
Yeah, I know it.
So it's a way for you to perhaps compare where, if there are any errors in this thing, because those computations are accurate up to whatever 10 minus.
Yeah. That's also the reason why we want to look at this spherical head model, because that's more or less
a
way.
That's the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's more or less a way to do it. Yeah. Also here, already there are spherical harmonics in there, and that's hard to implement. And to be sure, it's numerically accurate. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Sasha, again.